This podcast is sponsored by University Bookstore. Join the Pack Rewards and save 10% on Husky gear every day, even on game day. Join the Pack today at ubookstore.com. This podcast is brought to you by Adidas. Same dogs, new threads. Head to huskyteamstore.com to check out the new collection.
The Daily, UW student newspaper, has been around since 1891, and every edition, over 100 years worth of news, opinions, art, sports, science, wellness, etc., has been preserved. In this podcast, The Daily's editorial staff will explore how our paper has covered important historical, cultural, and social phenomena. Welcome to Into the Archives. It's 1987. The Princess Bride has just made its debut. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are all the rage, and the Cold War is in full swing. I'm not a history buff, but I would say that relations with the Soviet Union weren't the best, which is why it was a pretty huge deal when the Soviet rowing team came to campus to compete against the Huskies. It was the first ever Windermere Cup.
This was the first one. Yeah. So like it's the first Saturday in May, right? Every year. Mm-hmm. And so the UW hosts this huge opening day regatta on Montlake Cut, and
it's one of the biggest rowing events like in the country,
in the world.
In the world, yeah. And definitely like one of the biggest amateur events in the world. And I think every year have they brought an international team,
mm-hmm.
or almost every year close to it. So like this year it was the German boat. Oh, the German, like, fourth boat, whatever.
Yeah, it wasn't like the top German boat, but they have a history of inviting national teams. They invited like the Netherlands one year.
China was last year demolished.
Yeah.
By UW.
And it coincides with opening day of the boating season. So after the races, they have like this parade of boats that goes through the Montlake Cut. So it's like this huge tradition.
Cool.
Thousands of people go to watch rowing.
Read my article about all the people
in Seattle.
Up.
Like thousands of people, they line the shores.
If you haven't gone, go.
Like
Claudia.
I will.
I know the women's head, I think it was women's head coach, Yas Farouk, said it's like rowing in a stadium. Like it just gets loud and the bands are out there and it's rowing, so everything's super like posh.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the background of the Windermere Cup. But this first one, the reason why it was such a big deal, obviously.
It was like the first time any Soviet team had ever come to America, right?
Well, and given the background of the situation, you know, the 1980 Olympics. Yeah. I think they were in Moscow, the U.S.
boycotts. And then the next year,
1984 in LA, Russia boycotts.
My mom worked at those Olympics.
So this is the first time the Soviet Union had, like, literally come to the U.S. in years.
Actually, so in Lake Placid in 1980, the Soviet Union
came to the U.S. And that's the miracle.
And then the Miracle on Ice happened.
Okay.
It's like, and they'd come a couple, they played, like, Canadian all. Star team and like the NHL All-Star team, mm-hmm. they absolutely destroyed the NHL All-Stars.
Okay, so it wasn't like the first time in the Cold War, but it was still a big deal. And I remember, I'm not sure if you're going to get into this, and if so, cut it out. I don't remember if it was reading daily articles or somebody else's articles about the Soviets coming, but you were talking to the women's coach, Bob Ernst. He was like, they were convinced that he was a CIA spy or something, and he was convinced that at least one of their coaches was a KGB spy.
Yeah. Oh, whoa.
And that does not surprise me.
Like,
Bob Ernst was our?
Was the women's
coach. Was the women's head coach.
Do you know anything other than the quote that's on the wall?
No, he got fired a couple of years ago for, like, abusing his athletes.
Oh, yeah, they're...
He's a guy.
They did not get into that in our coverage.
Yeah, no, yeah. Like, he was on the...
This was, like, 3 years ago. Four years ago.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And no. Like, they didn't get into, like, one being a CIA spy or whatever. I mean, it's probably because it was an unfounded rumor. No?
Well, we don't know. I think...
We do know that Soviet, and same goes for, like, North Korean teams now, travel with an insane amount of coaches and security.
Actually, I was just reading a book about Soviet teams coming to America to play, and they were definitely followed around by KGB.
And it's security to keep the players in and not the fans out. Wow. But also, like, you were saying, they showed up at midnight pretty much. Like, I seem to remember reading in one of these, like, review articles that, like, the Soviet team practiced at some ungodly hour and did so with, like,
armed escorts
yes. with, like, on guns. Union Bay, like, yeah. with, like, the police on or the army boat, like, naval boats, Coast Guard boats. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Sections of campus were shut down, all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, it was
a time.
That is super funny because it sounds like, you know, this really intense, like, they're here and they're scary and whatever.
And are we going to see that headline where it's, like, the Reds are here?
No. Well, we're going to see a headline. Josh, do you want to read it?
Oh, Soviets choose Kmart over Bellevue Square by Jennifer Calliffe. And the lead is, attention Kmart shoppers, the Soviet rowers are now on aisle 4. Just follow the cameras, listen for the Russian, and watch the tall athletic bodies.
What?
Okay.
If you had been at the Aurora Kmart store Thursday afternoon, you would have been able to get a good look at some of the Soviet rowers here for this weekend's annual opening day regatta. They took a break from training and headed for Kmart to buy gifts for family and friends at home. Apparently, the officials had planned an excursion to Bellevue Square, but the Soviets requested a discount department store since they had many gifts to buy.
Wow.
Okay, that's actually understandable. Bell Square is a little spendy.
It's super pricey.
Yeah.
Well, and that also might have been BS. Like, maybe it would have been harder to get all these, like, protected Soviets to Bellevue Square.
But also, I remember, I think that's a really interesting thing, because I remember hearing testimony from, like, people who got out of, like, the Eastern Blocs, and, like, when people asked them about, like, adjusting to life in the first world in, like, capitalist countries, like, their biggest thing was, like, just going to stores and seeing shelves with just everything you could ever want. And, like, Kmart is, like, one of those. Like, you just walk in and there's just so much.
Well, and their sports teams basically lived on compounds and trained 12 months of the year.
Yeah, they're pretty much just part of the military.
Yeah, wow. No, they were all part of the military. To be on a sports team, you had to be a military officer in the military.
I didn't know that.
Like, the hockey team is called the Red Army because they were a military unit.
And the ones that weren't, like, in, if you look at the leagues in Russia, and still to this day, it's a little less, same with China, different teams have, like, sponsors. So she was talking to CSKA, the biggest team was the Red Army team. And then you have Spartak Moscow, which is the KGB-sponsored team. And then there are ones that are, like, some of them are beyond the, like, the military. Like, there's one that's, like, the Iron Workers have a team.
Metallurgists.
Yeah. So, like, I remember I was reading an article recently about the Chinese Basketball Association. Like, there's this team that's, like, the Yankees. They win everything. All the colors go their way. And they're also sponsored by the Chinese Army.
Whoa.
Dynamo Moscow.
Yeah. And there's, like, a huge rivalry between Dynamo Moscow and Spartak Moscow because it's the Red Army. It was the Red Army versus the KGB.
As the Huskies, Seattle, and the United States revved up for this highly politicized sporting event, the Daily was running ads like this.
So it's a picture, a sketch of two t-shirts, and it says Husky versus USSR, crew shirts are here. Which is basically what the design on the t-shirts is. We have a selection, official crew shirts celebrating the international competition Saturday, May 2nd, when the Husky crews row against the Soviets. Choose from a variety of styles, sizes S to XL, from our new store in Bellevue or our store on the Ave. Basically, they say crew on the front, and then they have the UW logo on one side and the hammer and sickle on the other side. And then they have
very 80s design.
And then they have some huskies rowing against some, I can't actually tell what that is. I assume it's like bears or something. And it says May 2nd.
Is that something the UW was trying to sell? Or
yeah, this was the university bookstore.
Oh my gosh.
Was selling this. I mean, also, like, I want to hear y'all's perspective on, like, marketing for sports events, and I don't know, yeah, like those special shirts, or like, oh, the changes in the uniforms and like the sponsors being on them and stuff like that. That's a different world for me.
Yeah, well, and I think it's strange that they sold, because you're not going to see the bookstore selling shirts for the Windermere Cup this year. You're not going to see it. You'll see like flags. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only thing they really distribute.
They can get the flags for
free. But they don't sell like Windermere Cup shirts.
No, I don't think so. They have like UW rowing shirts, but
yeah. So really, like, it's kind of the same in that most of the high apparel that is sold at like the bookstore or elsewhere is for football and men's basketball.
Just crazy how much money comes from all of this, though, you know? And, like,
yeah.
I look at sports and I'm like, oh, like, it's sports. It's the world of sports and games and competition. But then I feel like there's a whole other world that's like, no, it's a world of profit.
Yeah. It's also sports, like we talked about before with the boycotting, it's very political.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people don't want to view sports as political, even though it literally is. The United States government decided not to go to send athletes to the Olympics because of what was going on. Yeah. Soviets made the same decision. And same with the money situation. A lot of people want to not look at the whole capitalist part of it.
You talked about it. The U.S. boycotted the Olympics and held their own. I don't remember what they were called. And then the
Goodwill Games?
No, before that.
Okay.
During the Moscow Olympics, they held their own thing for boycotting nations. And then the next year when the Soviets held their own games while they were boycotting that were just for the Eastern Bloc. And then they used sports again to hold the Goodwill Games, I think, in 86?
86, yeah.
Something like that as sort of a reconciliation process.
Mm-hmm.
The 80s were a time, man.
Yeah. But just to go with my point before is that a lot of people don't want to see that side of sports, even though it is literally right there in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the capitalist side of it, like, the NCAA is one of the most corrupt organizations in the world.
Behind FIFA.
FIFA's bad. But just the amount of money they make from the month of March alone with the men's basketball tournament is absurd.
Yeah.
You'll watch a game and, I mean, at this point, all the sports people in this room have gotten used to watching sporting events where right as they cut after the commercial break, there's five different ads for, what was it this past year? Was it Orange Pepsi or something?
Ooh, yeah. Orange Vanilla Coke.
Orange Vanilla Coke, yeah. And you just kind of, when you watch sports, you kind of tune that out. But when you actually, like, look at it, it's like, ad after ad after ad after ad, and probably billions of dollars of profit in just the month of March.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are they profiting off of? They're profiting off of, like, these college students.
Yes.
Who don't make any money.
But, and, like, turning back to the political side a little bit, like, I don't know, I'm really interested in that sort of thing. I did a lot of research on it, but, like, if you look at what happened in the Sochi Olympics were 2014, right?
Mm-hmm.
When the U.S. went to Russia and, like, all of the backdrops of that, and even, like, 2008 when the U.S. went to
Beijing
and, like, all the political things. That has absolutely nothing with what was going on in the 70s and the 80s whenever the Americans played the Soviets.
It was a Cold War, not, like, a physical war.
This was the outlet.
Sports rivalry. And every sports game was, like, the actual battles that people
were allowed to fight.
That's
like,
so
and sometimes it turned into actual battles. The famous one, I think it was in 76?
Well, and like you guys said, it's something you could watch. So as a fan of the U.S. or as a citizen of the U.S., you'd watch one of these and you could literally actively root for your country against their country.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The one I was thinking of, 1956 in Melbourne, there was a water polo match. It wasn't even the U.S. and the Soviets. It was the Hungarian team and the Soviets. And it was 2 weeks after the Hungarian Revolution got suppressed. And I guess the only intro you need is that it's called the Blood in the Water match because that's how it ended. Because basically it was just a full match of Hungarians who hadn't like heard from their families since the Soviets came and cracked down on revolutionaries versus the Soviets, and they finally got a chance to basically punch somebody.
Whoa.
And it ended with like both teams just like 20 injuries.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So sometimes it spilled over, but even when it didn't, it was a chance for Americans to yell at Russians and vice versa pretty much.
Yeah. So we started this conversation because we were looking at shirts.
Yes.
And so after that ad ran, we had like a follow-up correction.
Mm.
Alec, if you want to read.
For the shirts?
Yeah, just go ahead and read that one out.
So the title's Rocky Five. If you go to the opening day races tomorrow, you may see up to 300 people wearing commemorative shirts purchased at the University of Bookstore. Unfortunately, most of the shirts inaccurately termed the races as a struggle between the UW and Russia or the Huskies against the Russians. Russia was a country until 1917. Call it the Soviet Union now. Russia, in quotes, is now just a part of the Soviet Union. The Huskies are squaring off against the Soviets, not the Russians. The sports shop at the bookstore admits that they made a mistake. They put a stamp of approval on the designs, which were drawn up by the two companies, or by two different companies. That's hilarious. Why is the title Rocky Five?
I don't know.
Because Rocky Four was
a
Well, it's because
isn't Rocky Four Rocky about?
Rocky is about.
Was Rocky IV the one with the Russians?
Rocky IV was the one with the Russian boxer.
But why is that the title of this particular correction?
I don't know.
That's so weird.
So weird, but I'm surprised it took so long to make that joke.
Okay, so I have one more article that I want y'all to read, but also, like, there's just this quick one that is actually kind of a recap of the game.
Oh, they got destroyed.
Of the event.
Yeah.
It was a slaughter.
It was.
And there's just this quote by...
Was it Ernst?
It was UW's men's coach, Dick Erickson. Quote, okay. It's like the men against the boys and the women against the girls.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It's usually by, like, tenths or even hundredths.
Of a second?
Yeah. Like Germany wasn't close this year, and you have won by like 5 seconds, right?
Wait, so the men beat us by how much?
15 seconds. 15 seconds.
Yeah, 15 is very not close.
That's significant.
Because we were like 5 seconds. It's like they beat them by a lot. So
wow.
This podcast is also brought to you by Global Innovation Exchange. Are you ready to lead the development of innovative solutions for connected devices or robotics? The UW Master of Science and Technology Innovation (MSTI). Offered by the Global Innovation Exchange, teaches the skills needed to go from concept to development and onto market. GAX is a new model of experiential education founded by the UW, Tsinghua University, and Microsoft. Work alongside industry sponsors to get hands-on experience. Courses are focused in the areas of design thinking, technology development, and entrepreneurship. Learn more at our next info session on October 3rd at 6 p.m. at the UW Allen Library Auditorium. And explore our cutting-edge space on December 5th at 5:20 p.m. at the Global Innovation Exchange in Bellevue. Learn more and sign up at gixnetwork.org. GIX, design, build, launch. Between tuition, books, student loans, and living expenses, managing money as a college student can be stressful. BECU is here to help. Visit becu.org/uw-student for financial advice made specifically to help UW students start their financial lives on the right foot. BECU can guide you step by step through tracking your spending, building a budget, learning to save, and understanding how to avoid common financial mistakes. BECU is a not-for-profit credit union and home of the exclusive purple and gold UW debit card. Visit becu.org/uw-student to get started. Federally insured by NCUA.
So we got crushed, creamed, schmacked, curb stomped by the Soviets. But the Daily's coverage wasn't all bad. After the match, we had a headline that read, "Understanding each other through athletics. Americans and Soviets learn they have a lot in common on a memorable opening day." Here's how it started.
Starts out, conversation broke all language barriers. Soviet UW crew confrontation on opening day was over, and the Soviets and the Huskies were gathered with members of the media down at Konnebrew Crew House Saturday afternoon. On one side, you had rain-soaked Americans. On the other, you had dampened Soviets. That was the other thing about this race. The weather was absolutely awful.
Really?
Like, the whole way down. The Husky rower was trying to get his goodwill message across to the Soviet rower. He spoke very loudly and very slowly. "We want you to come to our party tonight. It's at my house, lots of beer," the American said, making drinking motions with his hands. It didn't take long for the man from the Soviet Union to translate his response into English. "Okay," he said. Last weekend, stories like this were more important than the race results. In case you missed it, last weekend, the University of Washington was painted red. The Soviet Union did Seattle. Not only were the Soviet men and women's nationals crews in town to face the Husky Saturday morning, but the Soviet national gymnast squad happened to be in Heck Edmondson Pavilion the same day for an evening exhibition against the U.S. national team. The University Village Safeway stocked heavy on the caviar. What was important last weekend was not that the Soviet crews blew Washington out of the water, the Soviet gymnasts tumbled the daylights out of the Americans. What was important was the fact that the Soviets and Americans were talking about something other than bows and arrows. Or maybe it was that the Soviets and Americans were talking. Seattle was the Geneva of the sports world.
Ooh.
Was it, though?
No.
I know.
I just love the idea of them being like, "Oh, but beer, bro?"
You want to, like, shotgun one? Yeah, like, just strange.
They would die if they tried to drink with the Soviets.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
The Red Wings did that once. There was five Russians on the Red Wings, and they threw them, like, a Russian party. And they were very hungover the next day. And then Stan Bowman, the coach at the time, he backskated them, which is basically just skating, like, a lot until you throw up.
Oh! Wait, like, the coach made them do that the next day?
Yeah.
As punishment?
No, because they didn't invite him.
Jeez.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Into the Archives. Our show is produced by me, Claudia Yaw, and The Daily's podcast editor, Billy Featherston. Our theme music is by Mick Gilman. Special thanks to The Daily's sports experts, Alec Dietz, Haley Robinson, and Josh Kirschenbaum.